would love to call you back just as soon as I can.
The mailbox is full.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and I did send a postcard today to Leo, my grandson, who I've never met, who is about to turn 12. And so I sent him a card today, and I did send it direct to his address. Happy birthday, Leo. I just watched the video I did for you last year, The Offer Stands. And, you know, I'll give you the link of last year's. He's turning 12 now, Friday, I think, whatever. When he turned 11, I did, because I, you know, he gave me a gift many years ago, a Snoopy that the head would bounce. And so I took that outside, and it was going like crazy because it's powered by a solar cell. And out in the sun, it was having a wonderful time. And I tried to express to him the love of a granddaddy and encourage him on being a man. And it was very clear that I'm not his authority, his parents, his mom and dad are. But, you know, in it, I did set down a lot of things about, you know, trying to reason, and offered, you know, if he ever wanted to, with the permission of his parents, to have a reasoned dialogue on a variety of subjects. I set that before him. And of course, it's been a year, so, you know, I haven't heard. But I sent that to him today, and I do wonder, one of these days, one of these things break through. So there's a reminder of last year's video, and obviously I'm supposed to do another one here in a not-too-distant future. But that's that issue. I've mentioned before I watched The Gray Zone because, again, the two guys, Max Blumenthal and the other guy, Aaron Matei. They are excellent both as communications, and they ask pertinent questions, and they get themselves in trouble a lot. One of them I think is on the Ukraine kill list, and one of them maybe it's the same person is disinvited to the country of England because you're not supposed to point out when countries do foul things, but anyway. It was Max Blumenthal interviewed this gentleman one-on-one with Houthi spokesman. And our goal is to stop the genocide. That was a fantastic interview. Absolutely fantastic. So one of the things that brought to mind is I've studied a little bit over the years on Yemen, simply because there's a scene in Ben-Hur, the movie, that I've, you know, so many of those scenes I've taken to heart. But when Ben-Hur comes back to engage Masala after he's, you know, has his little problems, you know, off in prison and so forth and so forth. And then he goes back to, Israel. At the time and time of Christ, and he meets his nemesis again, and offers first a gift that's presented to him. The gift is a knife. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I noticed that when I first saw it, I thought that's interesting, especially the shape and whatnot. It seemed more artistic than functional. Although, you know, it'll work because those things are sharp. But I've studied because if you look at the country of Yemen, that's, you know, it's like in the West, the necktie used to be the common, which is basically kind of a useless piece of clothing, but it's there to, you know, it's the style. In Yemen, it's the same kind of thing, except it's not a tie. It's one of those knives. And again, with the curved point and whatnot, I mean, this is a really big deal. There's a huge market. I've seen places where the people who make them and their stores, the presentations, and some of these things are absolutely fantastic. And they are not used for, I'm trying to defend myself. It is just like the necktie. It is more of a symbol of And I've seen them in ceremonies. They do some kind of ceremonies with things where you know, two guys will pull it out and they kind of look like. But you know, the idea of actually using it for I think that's a pretty much a rarity. But you know, it's kind of like. Anyway, I found that fascinating. So that kind of drew me to know a little bit more about the culture in Yemen, because it's different than the culture of Saudi Arabia or other places around that. Similar but different. And so I found that fascinating. And if you look at a lot of the people from Yemen, you'll find, especially people of authority, whatnot, they have that knife. You know, it's kind of in the belt. So instead of from the tight down, it's from the waist up. So it's fascinating. But there's other things. Listen to what he said. You know, I think when you hear the U.S. news media, especially, you know, it's kind of Yemen is bad. I mean, we attack them constantly. I mean, we've been doing that for years. We've done foul things. We've used them for the we've had black sites there in Yemen. So it's a problem. But this gentleman is. He's a spokesman for, they say in the video, the Houthi spokesman, because the Houthi term is what's frequently used or most often used in the West. The organization's called, if you look at it, Ansar Allah, which is the supporters or helpers of God. One of the things I think find fascinating is, and I leave you the link just as a reference, because of the video of Shadi Shada, that's from 2018. This is when his family was killed, and obviously I've mentioned Shadi Shada many times, so the reminder of him. And when he's in there discussing, in the video, he discusses his kids and how they were believers and how they attended church and whatnot, because overtly Christian and things of that nature, and they worshipped Allah. And see, this is one of the things I find fascinating, because especially in the West, I think, oh, Allah, oh, those dastardly Muslims. Allah is simply Arabic for God. So when, you know, it's, if somebody says Allah, it doesn't mean they're Islamic. So I think we have to keep that in mind, because here we find a Christian gentleman talking about. So in a sense, when you have Ansar Allah, you know, supporters of God, well, that would be the Christian community, wouldn't it? Should be, which I find fascinating. But they are Islamic. But there's the second aspect. There's the Sunni Shia thing. And one of the things I really I'm relatively convinced of this from, you know, just an observer. The Sunni countries, Saudi Arabia, most prominently, but you know, others. They're the ones that are a little bit more militant. You know, ISIS and those kind of things are basically Sunni type organizations. Iraq was mostly Sunni. Syria had both the Sunni and Shia very strongly in there. Iraq apparently has a Shia community. Iran is Shia, overtly Shia. And so is Yemen. And so you often will see that, you know, they will use the term that they are surrogates or you know, things of that nature. But the issue is, I think, the tie between Yemen and Iran, besides the fact that they are just, you know, stone's throw away, is they are both Shia, encircled by a whole bunch of Sunnis. And so that gives you that bond. It's like, in a sense, there's a different bond between the U.S. and Canada, because for the most part, obviously instead of the French part of Canada, but we speak the same language. So there's a lot more of a cultural similarity. Whereas in Mexico, we don't speak the same language for the most part. So there's a cultural difference. We're neighbors. We're friendly in both cases in general. You know, there's a good bit of Christianity within Canada and within Mexico. But, you know, you get to Sunni Shia, I mean, it's fascinating. It, again, as I've pointed out, there was a study done. Somebody compiled basically all the recorded wars throughout history. And one of the things that it shows that, you know, because some people say large wars are religious. No, they're only about 10% where the fundamental was religion. And half of those were Sunni Shia. So, you know, I think that's an important consideration. There is tension there. It has to do with post-Muhammad, where the leadership went. The Shiites went one way, the Sunnis went another. But anyway, but the other thing is, from what I've heard, this guy says it extremely well, but I've heard it in other ways. There's a lot of countries, Russia is one of them, but Yemen is another one, and Syria is another one, who say, okay, you hit us, you do some damage to us, we're not going to respond in kind. Iran has done the same. Because if we do, we're going to give you the excuse to accelerate to the West, to the U.S. Israel has been bombing Syria. I mean, it's well over 200 strikes they have done over the last few years. That's a lot of stuff going on. And Syria has not responded in kind. But there's tension, obviously. There have been some issues between some countries of late. You know, in the case of Iran, there has been the seizing of oil tankers and things of the nature in both directions. Because the U.S. seized an Iranian oil tanker a while back, and Iran just took one back to basically take the equivalent oil, to steal it back, basically. So, you know, there are those kind of tensions. There's been the, you know, especially when Iran shot down a U.S. drone, when it was apparently in their airspace. That was only, what, a year or so ago, and that was kind of embarrassing for the U.S. But what was even worse a few years before that is they somehow got a U.S. drone to land. And, of course, then they used it to reverse engineer a lot of the stuff because they're a big drone manufacturer right now. Anyway, it's fascinating. And, of course, what they do is they make their drones that cost, I think, somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 to fly, you know, a significant distance and potentially drop a bomb or whatnot, or do the suicide type thing. And very often they're shot out of the air with Patriot missiles. So we have something that's cost maybe $40,000 for Iran or Russia because they've bought them. And we fire a $1 million missile at it. Oh, good, we defeated it. And, you know, defense contractors making a lot of money, and we're running out of Patriot missiles. So that's one of the problems. The fact that the U.S. is running out of Patriot missiles is becoming a really big problem. You know, at $1 million plus a whack, we don't make them fast enough, and they're being used. And so the protection they provide is dwindling, and this will be a problem. But anyway, that's another issue. But he discussed a variety of things about the tensions and so forth, explained really well about what's happening with, you know, because the image they use in one of these things is where they, you know, the helicopter, they videoed the whole thing. It's the Universal Galaxy, whatever it was, that this big, massive ship that they commandeered, and you know, you see the helicopter come in, and what they did, they put a Palestinian flag on the back and put a camera on it in order to, that's the video they show over and over again, because they wanted to show we're supporting the Palestinian people. And they went, and you know, had a lot of great camera work as they went, and they captured that ship. And as far as I recall, they still have it. A lot of money there. And they're specifically targeting ships that are related to Israel. And they do this, try to support the Palestinians. And it's a lot of tension. But of course, the U.S. would like to use this to get them into war so we can attack Iran, because if we do that, then we have, you know, a lot more money for the military-industrial complex. Yeah, that's a lot more money. But anyway, I really recommend that video. One of the things that I caught in it is he talked about how they steal the homes of the Palestinians. And he gave a reference to one that I knew of specifically. So I'll give you the video of it, which because I remembered it. It's from May 5th, 2021. So, over 2 years ago. Almost getting close to 3 years ago. If I don't steal your home, someone else will. And there's several videos on that, but it, see, and this is my concern, is that culture has been built up within the Zionist community. Again, there's a difference between Judaism and those that follow the Tanakh, the Old Testament. The Talmudic Jew, those who follow the Talmud, which is, again, is the traditions of men that Christ describes. And the Zionists, which is a political movement that came to the forefront in the late 1800s. And, of course, again, as I pointed out, at the Zionist Congress in 1897, they agreed upon a flag. 50 years later, that became the flag of the country of Israel. It's the Zionist flag. So, and it, you know, has nothing to do about the Old Testament. It's the Zionist flag. It's Zionism. But anyway, I found those things fascinating, and it relates to the whole point with Leo. I would love to be able to rationally engage my family about this, because what's happening is we're instilling hate. We need to hate the people of the country of Yemen, because look at what they have done. They've captured ships and things of that nature. There's the tension between them and Saudi Arabia. You know, was it a year, 2 years ago, when they flew a drone into Saudi Arabia and blew up a whole bunch of stuff at a oil processing facility. And it was a massive dent in oil production worldwide. Massive dent. You know, we're not talking 1 or 2%, we're talking like a quarter of the world's oil production stopped because of that. And it cost Saudi Arabia dearly. So there's tension between the two. And obviously, Saudi Arabia, the Sunnis, who are backed by the U.S. because we have a difficult relationship, but it was strong. It's getting a whole lot weaker. And the Shia, the Ansar Allah group, or the Houthis, there's a tension there. So obviously we would be standing against them, and you know, the U.S. wants war. And of course, when they're standing against Israel and standing with the Palestinians, you end up with, you know, it's hate and money are driving this. A follower of Christ loves, including love your enemies. I find this stuff fascinating and troubling. And, you know, I've talked with people who say, you know, in this case it was about Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, saying, oh yeah, bad people, let's go kill him. Because he gasses his own people. That was the excuse. That was a lie. That was a lie. There was the incident where Saddam Hussein did use chemical weapons, apparently provided directly or indirectly from the U.S., but to gas what group was it in northern Iraq? Anyway, I forget what group it was. So that apparently did happen, but the chemical stuff that's talked about in Syria did not. It's fraud. And again, I've documented that before. And of course, anybody, the whistleblowers from the OPCW, you know, they're They're persecuted. Whistleblowers persecuted. I don't know if I know anything about that. Anyway, so I would like to encourage Leo, James, and even Charlotte, my grandkids, to be able to think and to be able to love, not hate. I like to do that with my kids. Do I have kids? Oh, yeah. George has a birthday tomorrow. My lady, my wife, I want to encourage our grandkids. I want to encourage our kids. I want to show them love. I want to show you love. Please drop the barrier. Please drop the barrier. My lady, my wife, I love you, and I ask for you back.